Hi, I'm Eric.
I'm Alec.
We're the Petchy Brothers.
And this is StoryTap, where my brother and I try to tap the potential of an idea by turning it into a story.
This episode, Praetorian, Watchmen meets the Umbrella Academy.
My thoughts exactly.
Yeah, we talked about the idea.
Let's have an episode where I just don't talk.
The idea was, what did I call it? The Watch Kids. Because I was, I had watched Watchmen recently, and I thought, I don't remember where I got the idea. I think I kind of stole it from you with Wayne Manor.
Yeah, I want to make a TV show about the kids Batman raises.
Yeah, very cool.
You know, Batman never changes. Batman is like an unapproachable godlike father figure. So,
yeah. And I wanted to. Basically, the idea I had was like your idea for Wayne Manor, but like stripped down and more basic. Yours goes a lot more in depth, and it's really cool. Mine is like, I don't want to give away like plot points of yours, but
we've been over this. I don't think you have any plot points of mine.
Oh yeah, it's that rather than go into like the psychology of, you know, being a kid or a teen or a young adult with being adopted by like a bona fide superhero, we go into like the aftermath of that. So something along the lines of this Batman type single male adopts kids with maybe superhuman abilities, but the point is like it's the Bat family. It's like a patriarch and a bunch of young adults slash teens slash kids working to just nebulously fight crime. And the first plot point is the patriarch passes away, and it's them all dealing with that. And over the course of a season or a movie or multiple seasons or multiple movies, we sort of find out that father figure was, I guess the word is kind of abusive, because he's like a paragon of justice, of, you know, enforcing justice. And so holding real people to an ideal like that, like so strictly, like people just don't have the mental, I don't want to say toughness, because that makes it just sound like a purely good thing, but like people can't do that real life.
Yeah, people have imperfections.
There you go.
Can't always be those ideals.
Yes. So that's the idea we're working with. I suppose if it were a movie, I kind of feel like it would just go the same way as Watchmen, where they like, because we acknowledge we're humans and we have to compromise. Oh, okay. Or rather than it being a movie about how like the real world is not a comic book and you have to compromise, how about instead it's like, it is possible to reach this sort of paragon of virtue and of justice, but it has to be like working together with other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, actually, yeah, I like that. The other thing we've talked about is the similarities to the Umbrella Academy. I think one thing to differentiate that from this is, one, to opt for the non-superpowered track. Because Umbrella Academy, they're all really messed up by their father figure, by their dad who adopted them, actually, like, basically bought them.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any of the Umbrella Academy, so this is really great for recap. When I first pitched this idea, people were like, that's basically the Umbrella Academy, and I was like, dang it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, their dad wasn't a hero in the Umbrella Academy.
Oh.
Like, he's trying to make heroes. And I think that there's a very different dynamic in what you're talking about. This idea of, you need to be me, you need to be heroes of this guy, as opposed to this guy trying to, like, make champions for the world.
Huh, okay, yeah. Just talking about Umbrella Academy, because I want to get a little more info just, I don't know why. was it like an ego thing for him, or was he trying to like be a protector for mankind or something?
I'm going to be real. I didn't watch the second season. I think we get more information on it, but I think that there is like this colossal catastrophe that he knows is coming because he's like a Scientology alien who sees the future or like comes from the planet where the god beings live or something. And he knows that there's this catastrophe coming and there's like some grand destiny. So he's got like this grand design that he understands that needs to happen to save the world or the universe or the secret collection of herbs and spices, something.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah. We're slowly zeroing in on something. So, something a little different from, like a ticking clock, one time event that's coming.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. In to keep us on track, we'll always come back to the setup is kind of like the Umbrella Academy.
Uh-huh.
But I want the plot development to feel a little more like Snyder's Watchmen.
Okay. Plot development of Snyder's Watchmen. And I kind of like, I like that. There's sort of this idea of what's the it's like the Jimmy Olsen essay that opens the Dark Knight Returns. It wasn't so long ago that we had heroes.
That was awesome.
That was so, it was great.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Holy. It's that, and that, and that is sort of the vibe of Watchmen, is that like this, there was a time when this was pure.
Yeah.
And the world has dirtied it.
Oh my gosh, that's cool.
Yeah. Is that like, and I think that the idea that there are other heroes, but there was this one guy who was the paragon.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about being a paragon is no one can live up to you.
Yeah. Okay. Let's decide. That's so awesome. Let's decide, how do we want to frame it? The framing device, should it just be an ensemble cast, since we're following Watchmen plot development, I do kind of like an ensemble cast where everybody does their own thing and then it all culminates in the climax where we are all in the same place doing the same thing. And we've just been following. It's like a conspiracy theory with a bunch of different threads all leading to one spot. Or we could do from the outside in, where we have, even as the viewer, this sort of not having all the information. And then over the course of the movie, we get to know the younger heroes and then learn with our framing device, normal citizen as a protagonist, along the way that this patriarch was a bad guy or an abusive guy.
Right. Okay.
And when we do that, it's always an investigative journalist.
Yep. We have a lot of good stuff to say about investigative journalism, I guess. I was going to say, it's like, is it a murder mystery? But, I mean, I feel like that's... One, we do a lot of murder mysteries.
Do we?
Also, we've done a few recently. Yeah. But, but then our diet starts tomorrow.
Yeah, okay,
if we
cool.
If we do this, then...
Yeah, well, I'm open to it.
We'll do all right, we'll do an action movie or something next time then.
Yeah, sure.
But, ooh. I don't know, I feel like that there's something there. What are the ways... What are our framing devices? We can have the murder mystery approach of like it's investigative in that way versus the journalistic approach I don't think it should be an investigative reporter.
Yeah.
I think it should be like a lifestyle reporter, somebody from like Vanity Fair or Vogue or one of those big magazines or whatever.
Okay.
I don't know what the difference. I don't read enough magazines is what I'm getting. I don't really do that. But
okay.
But somebody who was like from a magazine who would be reporting them and they're and is reporting on this hero's death.
There we go. That would be really cool.
It's a retrospective.
Okay, now that we're kind of getting to, I really like that. And I like, how about, and this would be kind of a challenge. We'll play it by ear to see if we're open to it. Keeping in mind that we could do an ensemble cast of, but it's not the kids. It's all an ensemble cast of people on the outside. So one is doing like a Vanity Fair, interviewing the heroes after they've retired. Another is like a detective who's just trying to solve the murder. Right. And I think we should start deciding plot points.
Got it. Okay, so a detective. Oof. And I feel like there is a place for another hero.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the idea is that all these people who this paragon raised, they're no longer heroes, or at least they are, they've distanced themselves from him.
Yeah. Okay. I like that a lot. A second hero.
Yeah.
And let's make it, since we're not going the superpowered route, I think what would be really cool is, okay, here we go. World building. Here's the setup. The main hero who adopted all these kids who just have really good genes, I guess. They're all mesomorphs or whatever. He was like Batman without the rough, gritty aesthetic. But he was Batman in that he like had tools and gadgets and fought with his fists. He did not use guns. And he saved everyone every time kind of thing. Like, because this is all I do and all I live for, I don't have to trade lives and I don't have to choose to save one people over others or anything like that. Like, I am, like, almost superhuman in my ability. Then we have another guy who is also a hero, but he is, like, the embodiment of that compromise. He's like, there is such a thing as evil, and it is human, and those evil people die when they come across me, kind of thing.
Right.
And then, here we go. You know, Batman type passes away, maybe from cancer or something. And then I'm getting, like, the Shade or the Shadow or the Shrike or something bad. A very kind of sounding name.
I like
name.
Shrike.
The Shrike. I yeah. like that. So we got Batman and the Shrike. And Batman passes away of old age or cancer or something.
Do you,
and then,
do you know what a Shrike is?
I do not. Do you?
Yeah. It's it's a bird, and it's particularly, like, grisly and bleak. It's a bird, and I'm not sure what it kills, but I think it kills other birds or something, but, like, it pierces their organs against, like, I think cactus needles or something.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's...
This is morbid and sort of...
And, like, conceptual.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, then we've got the Batman type who saves everybody, and when he dies, people expect the Shrike. They're like, well, they were kind of the same age, so the Shrike might be on his way out. But the Shrike is, like, you know, instead of wearing a mask that covers, like, the top half of his face, he wears, like, a full-on mask that covers everything, so you get no details. And then people are like, the Shrike has not gotten older. He was like like, here we have a time skip after the Batman type passes away, and the Shrike is like still doing his thing.
Right. Yeah,
it can be that, like the Shrike
full
is
force
old.
Physical violence.
Yes, exactly. And the Shrike is old. He has retired, and one of the kids raised by Batman like takes up the mantle of the Shrike. And
perfect.
Then yeah. We get another interpretation of justice and woo. Okay, cool.
That's like, it's you're a few, and I think that works so great, because that, I mean, that fits perfectly in with the Batman Red Hood dynamic. You know what, if you don't know this, then Google it.
Yeah,
because we don't have time to explain it. But this idea of your refusal to compromise is what let me down. It's why I can't have a... It's why I couldn't have a life.
Ooh.
And now and this is how this should be done.
All right. Okay. This is really dope. Let's start going through it, like, scene by scene, or at least plot point by plot point, starting with the beginning, working up until the first pinch point, or almost halfway through. Because saving 2/3 for after the commercial break is really working out.
Okay.
So for the next 10, 15-ish minutes, we'll come up with, like, scenes and plot beats and such.
Okay. I suppose we can have a sort of our part where we sort of establish the day-to-day. There's a world with heroes. There's still police, and some heroes are celebrities. So we've got, you know, people interviewing heroes, or people interviewing people who know heroes. We've got our journalist, more like, I guess, a lifestyle reporter in this instance. Or maybe they report on heroes.
Okay, so we're doing a movie, yes?
Yes.
And this first, we start with pre-Batman character death? Or are we, like, are there heroes abound? Or are there only the Batman, Shrike, and the kids? Because I was...
I feel like there should be kind of the implication that there are other heroes. But it's not like... But they're not heavily focused on. And this is sort of like a geographic thing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, like, I dig that.
This region, this... our. Let's call it Schmotham City. in what is clearly... What is exactly like New York, but is definitely not New York.
Right.
Has this Batman type hero and this gritty anti-hero in the form of the Shrike.
Mm-hmm. And the scope of the entire movie never exceeds the city. So it's not like, these are the only superheroes in the world. It's like, maybe there are more, but we're not talking about that. That is out of scope.
Yeah, it's like, and there's just like, it's like, as we have our inciting incident, if we still use those, it is the announcement that this Batman stand-in has died. And it's like, costume heroes and world leaders community leaders from across the countries are sending their condolences, making speeches and everything. And maybe you get like a throwaway TV interview of saying, it's like, this guy was my hero, he's the reason I do what I do, blah blah blah.
Okay, so the inciting incident is Bat-Dad passing.
Yes. Okay. I mean, it can be. We can change it, but that seems like... And this is the one sense in which this is very similar to the Umbrella Academy.
Yeah.
Because this is what brings the gang together. It's the only reason all these people are in the same room again.
Oh, so the passing of Bat-Dad brings them all back together? Because I imagine they were still, like, in his care.
Oh, okay. So we're talking about younger people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which one would you rather?
Huh? I mean, I like that. I like this idea that they're still around.
Hmm.
So, I mean...
Okay. Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I'm going to commit to they're younger. And most of them are still in his care. And, like, one of them...
Yeah.
Was, like, 18 or 19 and had, you know, became an adult, so he was allowed to move out. And it turned out, like the press release was he died in their last spat with the smoker. The smoker. Oh my gosh.
Maurice.
Yeah. The puppeteers of love. Unmask him. It's Maurice. That's so dumb.
Okay. So that is like their Legion of Doom. It is
the Joker. It is the Joker,
the smoker, the Midnight Toker, Maurice, the Pompous of Love, and Steve Miller.
That's great. Okay, okay. So when the heroes released like an announcement that one of the Bat kids died in their last spat with the Schmoker. When in reality, he was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And he retired, and then his superhero persona retired, and he just moved out.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, well, he's dead. And then he can be the one who is the, like, Shrike apprentice. So, like, that's why they say he's just dead.
Yeah.
Because they're like, he was always a bad seed. And he died because he was not pure of heart. Jeez. You hear that, everybody? Don't smoke. Go to church.
Don't smoke and wait until marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you too will die at the hands
of the Schmoker.
Of the Schmoker.
Okay. Okay, I'm digging it. I'm really digging all of this as just the intro, like the first scene or two or three, The Incredibles style.
Okay.
You know how The Incredibles, like, we spend a good chunk of time. We have that weird little TV interview of Super Mega Ultra Lightning Babe.
Yeah.
And leave, and like, I just cleaned up this mess. And then immediately after that, we have, like, day in the life of, okay, that would be so dope. Day in the life of the heroes, but we don't follow them home. It's like if, you were watching The Incredibles, and then the narrative, like, stopped following Mr. Incredible and Elastigirl, and instead followed, Buddy.
Okay.
You know, like, he's, yeah, like, well, but less vengeful. It's like, we get, okay, that could be really cool. Like, our framing device is, like, a dude in a hostage situation at, like, a bank or something, and then the Bat Dad and kids come and save him. And then plot demands that he follow them for a while. And so, like, there's, like, 60s Batman-style ribbing in the Batmobile, in the Schmatchmobile, on the way from location A to B. And, like, he's, like, blown away. He's like, oh, this is so crazy. Like, I'm here with the actual, like, superhero family. And it's exactly how you read about it in comics. And then after that first, like, intro scene or two, it's like, just a CRTV talking about how the patriarch guy has passed away. And it was like, this is a huge blow. And superheroes from all over are sending in their condolences. But, oh man, I'm nailing it right now. Oh. Superheroes all over the country are sending in their condolences. It's a huge blow, but I'm sure the kids will step up. And then fast forward, and we get a voiceover of adult guy who was in the hostage situation, and it's a voiceover of his article talking about how there are no superheroes in the city anymore. That way you get a ton of exposition really quick, and there's a tone change and everything, and oh my gosh, and he's the framing device.
Okay, that's,
and then the inciting incident is the Moida.
Right.
Snaps all over.
Okay, now, first of all, I feel like I finally really understand the time frame for this. So it's like, this guy has this experience. It informed his life very much. So he's like, he's been following these people ever since. He reports for, you know, Capes magazine or whatever.
Exactly.
And that's really good. All right, yeah. I really like that.
This is really cool. That sets
it all up well. And then we've got his essay of, you know, like, no more heroes.
Yes. And he's like, there's still the Shrike, so, like, crime is not exponential, but the overall tone and, like, emotion in the city is not good.
Is that just like, this is not, and I think, like, him specifically condemning the Shrike's actions of saying, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's stopping crime with more crime.
There you go. Oh, that's huge. That's so heat. Okay. So we got the framing device, and so that's sort of the intro. It's almost kind of like a teaser, but it's really just sort of setting up the tone so that we can change it. And then, so now we're starting with the day in the life. Day in the life at work, day in the life at home for our protagonist, Jimmy Olsen type you know, Vanity Fair, or I don't know. So we have whatever he's doing at work. At work, he writes articles about, maybe he just is a small time. He's writing like a small column for like the more optimistic reader who's like, don't give up. You know, we don't... No, I was about to say, we don't need superheroes. You can just do good every day. But like that kind of goes against what he's all about.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a bit tough. But he writes a small column.
I feel like it's something good to be saying. Like, we can't cave to this cynicism. It's like the dawn is coming.
Yeah, it's just like, it's going to get better soon kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. It's like, just think about it was only like a decade ago or so when we still had a couple of heroes still running around trying to do stuff. And then, okay, so that's the day in the life at work. And then he goes home. And before we decide on how anything really plays out with this guy, what is he all about? What is his philosophy?
I don't know. Maybe it should be nostalgia.
Huh.
I mean, we see him. He is somebody whose entire life was informed by this one experience as an impressionable youth of being saved by what he saw as this perfect family. And progressively, and the rest of the movie is kind of progressively coming to the realization that wasn't real.
Mm. Okay. This is pretty heat.
That's something made up to inspire people while protecting them.
This is dope. Okay. What I'm kind of feeling is that his philosophy on the most part is... not necessarily his philosophy, but his sort of mindset is, I want to be a superhero, but like as a hobby. You know, I'm not going to like try to become a master at martial arts, but I will get really good at tumbling and I'll be in really great shape and I'll like know a lot about knives and guns and fighting and non-lethal takedowns and such.
Right.
And when he sees on the news or something that this young adult has been moited, and it's like also like the body has been set up, or there's a letter or something that's like, by the way, this was one of the superheroes who like let everybody down. Ooh, okay. I think I'm hatching a sort of conspiracy to figure out who the murderer is and everything, but we'll get to that later. So he sort of is like adamant, I need to be the guy who like does the piece on this.
Okay.
And then someone is like following him around being like, you get it. You know what it's about. You're fit. You're in the know. You know not only the micro in the moment, the technical knowledge of being a superhero, but you also understand like what they're supposed to stand for and what they're supposed to do and all the like grand strategy and politics of it. And he's like in denial about it. He's like, no, that's not the case. This is a hobby. And then another kid comes out of the blue and he's like, hey, what's up? I thought I'd just use my detective skills to track down my fellow kid here. And, oh, look at that. A random guy. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm a reporter or something. And, okay, you're way out of your depth here, kiddo. Like, Bat Dad trained us for like a decade before we even did anything. And then Jimmy Olsen takes that as like a confirmation. Like, you see, like, he's right. I am out of my depth. And then, so you've got the two dueling kids ideologies of, we should have never retired. Yes, we should have. And then Jimmy Olsen in the in-between of, like, we need people like this. But, oh, I'm not one. So he's just sort of in denial. Like, he is one. And then you have the mini Shrike come through and be like, yes, he is out of his depth. And then that sort of is, like, the obstacle that convinces all three of our little protagonists to band together and be like, nope, yep, he's the bad guy. Compromise is the real villain.
Yep.
Dang. Okay. Whew. Okay. So, wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
That sort of does get us to the midpoint, but we should come up with at least a little bit scene-by-scene action.
Right. Okay, what's happened to the real Shrike?
I guess he's just old.
Yeah.
Bad knees or something. You know, he's still... He's old Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond.
Got it.
He's still helping out. He's still doing his work as, like, the mentor of the new mini Shrike, as we call him. Mm-hmm. But he's... Whoa, what the heck was that?
A clunk.
Oh, that was a coaster just hit the ground. That scared me so bad. He's basically just like the guy in the chair now for...
The guy in the chair. The mini
Shrike. Exactly. Okay.
I feel like you just kind of glossed over how one of the kids was murdered.
Yeah.
You were just, all right, so... I mean, Bat Dad is still dead, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So let's get a time frame going. It's like 1920s to 30s kind of vibes.
Yeah, we got soft anachronism here.
There you go. Exactly. Anachronism.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anachronistic.
Not Yo. Like we're going to have iPhones in this time period, but like it's a period, it's an era that we like to call the past.
Yeah, it's BioShock kind of
there we go.
Setting. And I'm going to call him for now, the patriarch and the kids are going around stopping crime, and it's like this golden age of everything for the city. And just air quotes, the city. The patriarch passes away. Starting over. BioShock kind of setting. Golden age of justice and pretty much everything. A young 10 to 12 year old Jimmy is caught up in a bank heist something or other, is saved by the patriarch and the kids, is dropped off, 5, 6, 7 years go by, and he is now working in the mailroom at Capes Magazine. He's starting to write for Capes Magazine. 5, 10 years go by. He's 18 to 19 now. The patriarch passes away, and he's like, oh no, that's a huge blow. Those kids are really going to have to step up. Another, like, 5 years go by. He's, like, 25 to 26 when our movie really gets going plot-wise. You dig?
Yes, I do.
Dang. We're not even halfway through. But it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. He is working at Capes Magazine. Voiceover of, this is how things were just a couple of years ago. It's hard to believe that everything is so terrible only 5 years after that. Here's how things are. The only so-called hero left is the Shrike, and he's more of just a vigilante, not like a comic book vigilante. He is like how vigilantes are in real life.
Yeah.
In the way. But
yeah,
also like, getting stuff done.
Considering his age, it's surprising that he seems to have only grown more violent in recent years.
Exactly.
Ooh, foreshadow. Ooh.
Very scary. And then there it is at work, and we go home. He doesn't really do anything. He just works out in his room. He just reads about the art of war. I don't know. Whatever cool, mystic kind of hobbies you can have. Murder happens. He is, like, hell-bent on solving it. But people are like, that is not your job. And then who's this guy following him? And it's like, oh, it's one of the kids. It's the kid who, like, has been in denial and has, like, just been working as, like, a detective or a cop or something.
Mm.
He's like... I couldn't like do the whole superhero thing alone. So, yeah. And he can be the mentor. He can be like what's that called in the Hero with a Thousand Faces or everything's a
call to adventure guy. The
is he just the mentor?
Whatever, Virgil.
Yeah, the old mentor, whatever that word is.
I don't know. That book again. I sort of tuned out towards the end.
Me too. But and he dies or goes away or something, because you know there's only one story. And he is basically like, I've got everything figured out. It's just a matter of passing that knowledge on to the protagonist. But then something happens where he can't. They go around trying to solve things or something or other. And then how about their investigation leads them? Yes, exactly. Here we go. This is the first sort of pinch point. Jimmy and the detective... The detective is like, I know exactly where our investigation needs to go next. And they go to, like, the local multimillionaire's office. And they're like, and Jimmy's kind of shook. He's like, I don't know why we're here. And the detective is like, he'll know something. And then they basically sneak into his office. And Jimmy's like, this is not what detectives and cops do. And they sneak in. Multimillionaire looks up and he's like, ah, it's you, fellow kid. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this guy who's made a billion off of security contracts or whatever is another one of the kids. Yeah. And he's the jaded one who's like, you're way out of your depth. The only reason we got anything done was because of Dad. I mean, Bruce. And I feel like that's a good place to stop.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Oh, look at that.
Well, that's, oh,
we're back.
We made it again. All right, so we decided to call the movie Praetorian because that's what we're going to call the lads. The patriarch, the Batman stand-in guy, is going to be called the Consul, which is what they called one of the two leaders of ancient Rome, and that's like a pre-imperial model where they had consul, they had elected officials.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, and then the guys beneath them were Praetorians.
Yep.
Consul and Praetorians, because, you know, superheroes are classics nerds.
Yeah. I like the idea of ancient Rome figureheads, especially in the military and all that, because it's very old school, golden age, bronze age, all of those like buzzwords about old school, non-problematic, like manly men, big muscular, inspiring figures without getting into the ubermensch bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the Romans are literally the bad guys in the Bible.
Yeah, didn't think about that.
Yeah, well, it's not really.
The main character, we named him Jimmy.
Jimmy Olsen, man.
Requires no explanation. The patriarch character, the sort of bat dad who is Consul, is his superhero name. His character's name, his secret identity, we went with Ellsworth because Ellsworth is the last name of the guy who basically gave Batman his no-kill rule, which, in my opinion, is like Paragon Batman. That's why Batman has been such a sort of timeless character, is because he doesn't have to choose. He always saves everyone, but most importantly, he does it the right way. The optimistic Praetorian kid, like we said, Consul and the Praetorians, the optimistic one who first comes across Jimmy in his investigation and says, like, we can do this. I'm a detective. His name is Kirby, after Jack Kirby. The pessimistic kid who we come across, the millionaire, the billionaire, whoever, that we come across, that Kirby and Jimmy come across during the investigation, his name is Moore, M-O-O-R-E, after Alan Moore.
Alan Moore's going to beat the shit out of us for naming a billionaire after him.
The Shrike, his name is Miller. All of these are named after famous
Frank Miller, famously crazy and violent comic book guy.
And the other Praetorian who was like a bad dude who ended up becoming the Shrike after the Shrike retired, his name is Winnick. And the dead Praetorian who was murdered at the beginning of the movie, his name is Todd, after Jason Todd, who might be the most famous like comic book character death.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, yeah.
Only aside from like Superman. Only one that seems to compete is like Superman, but Superman never stays dead. Granted, now they're just Jason Todd anymore.
No, yeah. Jason Todd only died once, though.
That's true.
When you're like, yeah, Superman died, it's like, okay, well, how many times? You're like, well, definitely at least once, but I'm pretty sure a few times. I know,
but the death of Superman was like a big event in comic books when the first time he dies and he's beaten to death by Doomsday.
That's right. I should read that, shouldn't I?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, midpoint. What was the midpoint? The plot points were intro scene, superheroes are real and they're really cool, short time skip to Ellsworth, the patriarch, dying, Consul. Mm-hmm. Is dead. Ooh, that's a big L, but it's okay. Another mini time skip. There's Jimmy typing the article. The Praetorians are really did not step up. They all retired. They're all gone.
Death.
He sees on the news that Todd has died, the other Praetorian, the dead
yes.
Praetorian. And then his investigation, or his personal following of things, because he knows the cops are investigating, but he's also his own little investigation, Kirby stops him, and he's like, yo, I'm in Smash Bros. I'm in Super Smash Bros. And I have my own line of games. Kirby stops him and he's like, let's do this together. You've got what it takes to be a hero. And he's like, no, I'm not even like an amateur to your professional. I'm a hobbyist. And he's like, no, you've got what it takes. All it takes is like the mindset, I want to do good. Mm. And then pessimistic Praetorian, Moore, they find him. And why? Okay, there we go. Our first sort of plot exploration for the second half after the commercial break.
Yay.
Why does Moore know anything? Because we have to find him. The plot demands it. But what is it? What does he know?
He's found at one of Moore's properties.
Ooh.
Body was found at one of Moore's properties.
Mm.
And it's like, all right, fine. I had met with Todd. He asked me to start things back up. I had the resources. I had resources that he said he needed. And I told him to F off into the ocean.
Yeah, okay, there we go. He found out. That there's our clue that like leads us to the next spot. Oh, this is so good. That can be our pinch point. Okay, first pinch point. After the inciting incident that is Todd has been murdered and Kirby's coming along with Jimmy and Kirby, go to first pinch point is Moore. Why are we here? Because Todd was found dead. Like, obviously the body was moved, but the last place we know he was alive and probably where he was murdered was one of your, like, computer labs or something or other.
It's like, all right, I didn't want to do this again, but I felt bad for Todd. So I let him use one of my spaces for his silly little
investigation.
He slept in here, and I let him use some of my leftover junk.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, and Moore is like, now I have to help. He's not like, heck yeah, we're getting the band back together. The Praetorians ride again. He's like, I have to help because it was in my warehouse. He's like, but I'm going to follow along and kind of help y'all because I want to make sure this gets solved, so that we can control the narrative, so word doesn't get out that I was a Praetorian. You dig?
Yeah.
Okay, so the midpoint is sort of, we find out that the Shrike killed. Or before we get to the midpoint, we can find out that, like, the midpoint all in one, we run into the new Shrike, the mini Shrike, as I like to call him.
Right.
I'll just keep calling him the mini Shrike. Winnick.
I feel like
the other Praetorian turned Shrike.
I feel like that as the midpoint works well, especially because as they leave, Kirby and Moore can just look at each other and say, that wasn't him. All right. We've met the Shrike. Oh, we fought with the Shrike. We fought the Shrike. That's not him.
Okay, this is pretty spicy. I don't want it to be... I don't think there's enough time to have so many twists of who is the new Shrike, if there even is one. And also, well, if it wasn't the... the Shrike murdered Todd. Big twist. So I think... How about they sort of disavowed Winnick when he moved out and became and started working with the Shrike. And so when they're looking for, oh my gosh, that's it. The midpoint is we find out that Todd was murdered because he was investigating the Shrike and who the Shrike was. And he was like, okay. And then Jimmy is like, so the Shrike murdered him. And they're both like, no. That is not the case. And he's like, what? He's like, we just refuse to believe that. He's like, what? Why? And he's like, we just know him, okay? We fought him a couple times, and he was like, sort of like that. Like, he wouldn't just murder somebody for that. okay? And they're saying that because they sort of suspect that Winnick is now the Shrike.
Right.
So, the second pinch point, we find... Yeah, okay. The midpoint is... We have concrete sort of evidence that what Todd was doing was investigating the Shrike identity. But the second pinch point, the first plot point after the midpoint, we find... We fight the Shrike. We found some sort of evidence like, yeah, your weird ceramic blade, whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Trace amounts of that were found in Todd's throat or whatever. Oh, you stabbed him to death or whatever. And then Shrike rips off his weird little hood thing and he's like, no, I didn't. Shut up. And then everybody's like, and by everybody, I just mean Jimmy, because Jimmy's the only one who didn't know. And the other ones are like, get over it, Jimmy.
Yeah. Because they've shown him, like, they've shared some secrets, and they're like, this is the other guy. Like, so this is the Praetorian who died, huh? This is the other Praetorian who died years back. And they're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, I forgot we told everybody that Winnick died.
Got it. And now it's like, no, surprise, he's alive.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
And then, I don't know, when we actually wrote this, we'd have another MacGuffin going on. It's like, there's some organized crime crap, and that, like, this goes all the way to the top, and then it just doesn't. Like, it's just a crime. Those guys got arrested.
Yeah. There's not much left to do. There's just, like, the sort of climax and denouement, and what really happened, I don't know if we said this on recording. I think we only said it during the break. Todd was investigating the Shrike's true identity, but who killed him was the old Shrike.
Yeah. We didn't...
Miller.
Yeah. Oh, right. We named him Miller.
Yeah, Miller, who was the Shrike when Ellsworth Consul, the Patriarch, was alive. But, you know, he's old now. He's basically old Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
He's, like, still kind of a beast, but... Yeah. And so, okay, here we go. We discuss the climax of the movie. It is Miller, I'm just going to say, the Shrike, the Praetorians, and Jimmy, all in one spot.
Right.
Big Shrike and Mini Shrike. And the big reveal is old Shrike killed Todd because Todd figured out he used to be the Shrike. And he's like, I'm talking like I have a plan. I don't. I'm straight up asking.
I'm buying it.
Old Shrike basically confronts all the Praetorians and Mini Shrike and Jimmy. What are you gonna do? Like, you cannot lock me up. And this is sort of an ultimatum for you, Mini Shrike. You must kill me, I guess. Because, just prove I'm right?
Yes, strike me down, and you'll become more shrikey.
Oh, okay. What I'm kind of thinking is, maybe they fight, or maybe they don't. Maybe, but what ultimately happens is that Mini Shrike just says, you're going to jail. He's like, you can't put me in jail, I'll tell everyone who you are. And he's like, no, you won't. What? Why? What? Because you know that deep down, compromise is wrong. And then he puts him in jail, and he's like, do you know he's going to do that? And he's like, I don't. I really hope he doesn't. That's kind of all I got.
I don't know. Maybe, I mean, what's the actual quote from the real Ellsworth? The villain must die by his own machinations.
Yeah, the villain, no matter the depths of his villainy, cannot be killed by the hero. If the villain is to die, he must be killed by his own evil machinations.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, one, I think that there is something to be said for the Shrike saying, it's like, I've always been misunderstood. I am not I am not...
murdering.
I'm not the embodiment of compromise. Like, I am the real embodiment of ideals. That I did what was necessary, and that is... and that is an ideal in and of itself.
Mm.
And then there's like some deep monologue that I don't have time to write right now. Like conversation or stuff. I suppose it should be that he... I mean, do we want to go old school and he's got like... a death trap.
Oh. He's like locked people up in a death trap or something?
Yeah, he's locked the Praetorians up in a death trap. And he's like, you know, I always wanted to build one of these.
Okay. That could be something. Oh! Oh my gosh. Here we go.
Here we go.
Yes, the Shrike is like... oh my gosh, this is kind of a mess, but I think old... okay, I'm just going to go with Shrike and Mini Shrike.
Okay.
Instead of whatever names we gave him. Shrike sets up this sort of death trap. When we the Praetorians, Mini Shrike and Jimmy, corner old Shrike and say, hey, we figured it out. We know you killed Todd. It's a little fuzzy why, or maybe we've already figured that out too. Whatever is more interesting for the plot. We're cornering you. And he says, right, yes, but, I know, and here's my sort of explanation for why I did it. Don't you think, Mini Shrike? That's pretty reasonable. And he's like, yes. And then they karate chop, knock him out. And they, like, don't even take Jimmy because they don't, like, consider him superhero material, mm-hmm. maybe.
Okay.
But then Jimmy's like, I have to go rescue them. And then he rolls up to the Shrike cave and they're, like, tied to a death trap, supervillain style. And Shrike and Mini Shrike are up in their little bulletproof glass box watching it all. And he's like, you must choose or something. And basically what he's doing is he's instilling in Jimmy, who he sees as the next generation, but like the next one to recruit. He's like, you will try to save them both and you will fail to save either of them. And that is the true essence of compromise.
That's the point.
Exactly. It's not necessarily compromise. It's... no, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's if you chase the ideal of I can save everyone without hurting anyone.
Let die the woman you love or suffer the little children. Man, we see this a lot.
Spider-Man! Yeah, exactly. So he basically has this idea. Like, I am going to instill in you... compromise is the way to go when it comes to superheroism. And then Jimmy saves the pessimistic
more.
Praetorian more because he and the optimistic Praetorian both know that Mini Shrike is not going to let him die. And so that's sort of the essence of the message in the end. The only reason that Batman-like ideology of saving everyone seemed so unattainable was because he was alone. That's what makes Batman so impressive, is that he can save everyone without any sort of compromise, alone. The only reason that's so impressive is because he's working alone at it. And as humans, we tend to, you know, think like, oh, well, that's impossible. But it's not the means that should matter. It's the ends of everyone living in the end,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then that way, we have basically started the new Praetorians. Jimmy, the little underdog. Who else but Jimmy?
Who else but Jimmy?
And his optimism is like, no, like... you're all getting carried away with, like, which ideology is more important, when in reality, we're superheroes. We save people. That is our one responsibility. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was the real problem. Oh my gosh. Everybody was trying to be Batman. I mean, Console.
Right.
Everybody was trying to be the Paragon, when really they should just be working together to save as many people as possible. Oh my gosh, that's pretty fun.
That's pretty great. That's
fun. I mean, pretty fun to talk about. Maybe that's not so fun. I mean, it would have to be pretty... It would have to be a little more nuanced in the movie. Or, not nuanced. The approach would have to be a little more visually stimulating in the movie. Because we couldn't just have Jimmy sit and be like, well, you see...
We'll just do the Spider-Verse animation.
Yeah, there you go. He talks and it's like... And there's trap drums. Gosh, I love Spider-Verse. Gosh, I love really Batman.
Oh, maybe that's what we need. A really good animated Batman feature film with a theatrical release. Like, that good. That big.
Oh.
But we,
we'll do that next.
What?
We'll do that next.
I don't hate that. Yeah.
We'll do that. That would be awesome.
We'll do a,
I'm going to give you
Mask of the Phantasm style story for the, like, the 2020s. Or just,
Yo. Oh, my gosh. If you haven't seen Mask of the Phantasm, you're a chump. Not really. Wow. It's just really amazing, and you should watch it.
Right. Okay. But we got off. And hang on. What happens to the OG Shrike? Does he die in as a result of his own villainous machinations?
No. I think... Maybe his villainous machination is that he smokes, and they get him to stop. I'm kidding. I think that he should also kind of be moved by Jimmy's speech of, it's not that I was trying to be that unattainable paragon of justice, it's that I was taking that paragon of justice as an individual too seriously, so that he was basically so quick to compromise. He was basically so quick to compromise the abilities of humanity. He was basically like, I'm cool because I don't believe that anybody could do that. When in reality, nobody can do that. But, like, acknowledging that is just one of the steps. Rather than being like, you know, like my beef with nihilism.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at the scale of the universe. Guess I don't ever have to think critically again.
Yeah.
You see?
No, yeah. What are you going to do? Be sad at me?
Exactly.
That's a quote from Red from Overly Sarcastic Productions talking about how pessimism is dumb.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Grimdark, nihilism, pessimism, chumps.
Chumps.
Now, to be fair, no such thing as an ultimate chump. Just someone who's stuck on a step and needs some help.
Fair enough. All right, yeah. Okay, so, but...
I'm digging it.
I like it. It's not our best, but it's not our worst.
Yeah,
this is a complete concept.
Yeah, this is a really cool, fun concept.
You could bring this to someone, and they would say, fix this, this, and this.
Exactly. This is awesome. Oh my gosh. I felt like this had a slump here and there, but, like, we worked through it, and that's what we do here.
Exactly. I do want to ask a quick question. This kind of started with, like, this idea kind of changed in the middle. Or if it didn't, we have a problem.
Uh-oh.
I mean, it was originally, like, have we excused abuse? Have we excused abusive parenting? Or was the idea that...
Oh, well, no. Okay. Here's the thing. I, and this is me personally, I don't want to speak in absolutes here. I absolutely idolize Batman in every way.
Right.
The whole, like, I dedicate myself wholly to the enforcement of justice without judgment. I believe that evil must be stopped without being, like, the judge, jury, and executioner. Like, I just stop people from being hurt. Like, I save people. End of responsibilities. That is all I do. However, I also acknowledge it is pretty much impossible to become that, but part of being that is, like, training your replacement, because you're acknowledging that you're a human and you are mortal. You're like, there needs to be a new Batman after me, basically.
Got it.
So the only way a human being could train the next Batman is Whiplash. The movie Whiplash, like, finding somebody who can take it. So, he's not exactly Batman, because in my mind, Batman is perfect. It is raining outside. Batman is perfect, in my mind. He's not quite Batman, because he would have acknowledged, I'm wasting my time trying to train my replacement when I should just be inspiring people to be good and save as many people as you can. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
So, it's a tricky, or dancing on the razor's edge. To one side, we are praising him for his actions, saving everybody. And on the other side, we are condemning him because he is like an abusive patriarchal figure.
All right, yeah. Okay.
Abuse bad, to clarify.
Yeah.
Abuse bad.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I also just sort of fell into a trap here saying it's like that if you make something, then you're condoning everyone's actions in it. I mean, like, the message that we have at the end is not necessarily, it's like, actually, it's almost the opposite of this. It's like, we were trying to be him. He was kind of trying to make us into collectively make us into something that added up to him.
Yeah.
Whereas the reality is, we have to do this. We have to save as many people as we can. The means are not what's important. It's the ends. It's saving people.
Yes.
Okay. There we go. Conceptually, it all tracks. We're all here. Abuse is bad. anything else? I think feel like that's us together. That's a whole thing.
No, yeah. I think this is not necessarily airtight, but fairly solid.
Yeah.
And there we probably have about an hour worth of content now.
You pour water into this, it would hold it for a while. Like, it would leak out real slow.
There are very small holes.
Yeah.
And that's something worth bragging about in Hollywood. Okay. I dig it. I think Tap. The end.
Thanks for listening to this episode of StoryTap. If you enjoyed, make sure to leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter @StoryTapPodcast. It helps a ton. And thanks again.